Hey everybody, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Black Expat. My name is Carl, and I'm excited to be bringing you yet another episode. So in our previous episode, we talked about my time in Kenya and how amazing that was, right? It was the longest podcast I had ever done. It was an hour and 5 minutes. If you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out. Thanks for the comments and feedback. I will be putting my thoughts in writing so that they're more concise and more fluid, if you will. I kind of jumped all over the place, but that's, you know, kind of what the experience was like. It took me from here to there to pretty much everywhere. But today, I've been having a lot of conversations this week with a lot of different people. I mean, I had some great questions that kind of came in. People in Taiwan, people back in America, close friends, people I mentor. Basically asking, like, what is it like going from being abroad and living in Taiwan and coming back home? Right. So like not coming back home to stay like I did when I went from Taiwan. And I wanted to go back to, you know, kind of find myself and refocus and figure out whether I wanted to be living in America or be living in Taiwan. More in the sense of, you know, when you are gone. So I didn't go back home for the first time when I first moved abroad and for like 2.5 years. So what was that experience like? Right. And I kind of want to talk about that today on this podcast. And I think it's interesting because I don't get asked as often as I thought I would once I started podcasting and writing and, you know, started the travel company about what has kept me abroad for so long, right? People ask, what do you like about it? What do you do out there? How's the food? What kind of house do you have? And all these other silly questions about the culture here and is everybody really short and what kind of, is the food really gross? You know, things like that, silly questions like that. And also some very serious ones like what's the environment like? What's the culture like? But I never really got asked, like what, well, I don't get asked as often as I thought I would, what has kept me out here for so long? And there's a lot of different things that I can kind of talk about as to why I've stayed out here for so long. But I think one of the more important things that's kept me out here is the connections I've been able to make abroad. And I don't mean connections like business connections, right? Like, oh, I know somebody who works for this company and I get free things. And not those type of connections, like friendship connections. And then friendships that really become familial and lifelong connections. And I know you guys are thinking like, well, early in a different podcast, you talked about how somebody that was your friend for 7 years and that you tutored and mentored and brought up ended up stabbing you in the back and taking your job for 2000 NT and didn't stand up for you when you basically trained her and taught her everything that she knew. Well, not everything, but, you know, most things. And yeah, while most things about the job. And while that may be true, you know, that happens to everybody. Like, it's not things that happen in Taiwan, in my opinion, aren't just because I'm in Taiwan, those things happen. Right? I've lost best friends in America. For example, my best friend in college, who was my road dog, we stopped talking for a solid 2 years because we had a disagreement. And I don't even remember what the disagreement was about. Right? We stopped talking because of fraternity life and stopped talking because, you know, like we both lost sight of what we really wanted to do and what we were trying to do and each other. We ended up reconnecting and then falling off again. So I don't think that that's necessarily, you know, a problem that's synonymous with living abroad. So, I mean, what kept me here were the connections that I was able to make, right? So I have really, really amazing friends. Like my best friend, Patrick, and business partner, we weren't best friends in college, right? I'm a year older than him. He came in after me. And when we met each other, we kind of just clicked. It was like, oh, you're cool. I like you. You're an ace club. You're an alpha. I'm an ace club. I'm a sigma. We both just be chilling. Like we got girlfriends. Then we broke up with our girlfriends and then we're single. Then we had a much better time in college being single. don't tell my girlfriend I said that. But, you know, I mean, we just kind of clicked on that level. Like, it wasn't anything deep. Like, oh, yeah, we click on an intellectual level, so, man, let's have these deep conversations. It was like, no, you're a cool person. I'm a cool person. I like your style. We like the same kind of cars. We both play video games. We're both not the tallest people in the world, and like, pretty much everybody knows us. Like, we're cool. We're cool people. That was it, right? So I didn't know before coming to Taiwan and then hiring him and bringing him out to Taiwan with me that we would grow to be, you know, like, he's my brother now, right? Like, we're family. Like, I've lived with them for 7 years. We have different rooms. We have a room that separates us too. So I've lived with them for 7 years. I lived with them and his girlfriend for a little bit. We own a dog together. Like, we've done so many amazing things, and I didn't know that these things would happen before I came to Taiwan. So like the relationship and the friendship that I built with Patrick is something, because for me, I don't have any brothers, right? And I've kind of realized in America when I was there going to school and in college, I had a lot of female friends, close friends. Now, I was in the fraternity, so of course I had male friends. Like, I had male, some of my lifelong friends from high school are males. Like, you know, so Johns and Blakes and Jeremiah, people I've known for 20 plus years are male friends. But the people, you know, during my collegiate life were females, the ones I was really close to. But my high school friends, I'll always be close with them. We don't miss a beat because we basically grew up together. So if I see them, it's like never miss a day. We still keep in contact. We still text, all that. But I kind of built a similar, you know, relationship with Patrick here. Like, he'll probably be the best man at my wedding. One of many, but he definitely be my best man. So I was able to establish a familial, like, connection with Patrick. No, he came out here, and again, he could have come out here like many others that have come, and I didn't necessarily have to live with him. Like, we didn't live together as soon as he got out here. He lived in his own space. Then we hung out, we talked, we realized, man, we got a lot of common. Man, we feel the same way about, you know, things that we do. Man, we feel the same way about if we lived together, how we would have it, what we'd like it to be like. All right, cool, let's move in together. And like, and again, after moving in together and sharing an apartment, an amazing apartment at that, we could have been like, nah, man, I ain't really with this. But you know what? It didn't. It grew, our relationship grew and it developed. So that connection in and of itself is important. Because remember, I talked about before in a previous podcast, was like, hey, well, one of the things that keeps people there is that is love and relationships, top things. Love and relationships for men and for women. Can you date here? Can you find somebody you like here? Like, right, most for some people, can you get laid here? Like, that's a real thing. Can you do that? The second thing is food. Some people are like, man, I can't survive without food that I like. I don't like the food here. It messes up my stomach. I feel unhealthy. And then the third most important thing is family. Like, people don't, they can't stand being away from their family as much. And one of the things that I think I want to associate with family, and again, it's my opinion, is culture. Family and culture. One of the greatest things for me, my first year that I've really missed, was being able to speak the way I speak when I'm at home in Chicago. The way I speak to my best friends. The way I speak to my good friends. The way I speak to people in Chicago. I miss that, right? One, I'm speaking another language, Chinese for the most part. That's not my culture at all. It's a culture I love and I appreciate and I know and I understand, but it's not South Side of Chicago culture, right? So when Patrick came, I talked to him like he was one of the, because he was one of the homies, I could then come home to my home and be myself. I had a roommate prior to that, and he was from Chicago, and I love him to death. He's a great guy, Brad. He's amazing. Nothing against him, but we didn't speak the same cultural language. While he understood and he listened to the same music, we're still two different people from two completely different places. He's white, I'm black. And the way we talked was just different. Right. While I could speak the way that I want to speak and feel comfortable speaking to him, it just wasn't the same. It wasn't natural. He wouldn't respond in the same ways. Right. Like I can't tell him, hey, shut up before I punch in your neck. And he'd be like, man, like he doesn't know if I'm threatening him or if I'm joking around. Right. So, I mean, it's different ways of communicating and being able to come home to that. Because I think we can all agree that when you're at work, you can be yourself depending on the job that you have. One of the reasons I love teaching is because in the classroom, I am Carl. I'm myself. I create the atmosphere that I want. I have complete control over that, right? But when I go back into the office, I have to be a certain way, right? So, oh, Carl, you're the manager. So managers have to talk this way. Managers have to be this way. Managers have to carry themselves this way, right? I can't be listening to loud rap music in the office, or I can't be rapping lyrics, not with the curse words, or I can't be singing R&B, right? I can do those things, but I can't do them comfortably. Right. And most people can't do that at their jobs anyway. You feel me? You get what I'm saying? So I think for me, it was that level of comfort, finding that type of friendship, the type of camaraderie here is one of the reasons, again, connections abroad was one of the main reasons I've been able to stay here for so long. That connection is key. Right. And it's not just that connection. It was, all right, Patrick, I have a best friend. I have a housemate. I have somebody that I feel comfortable being with. I can talk to them about anything. I can be open and honest with them. I can be myself around them. So what else do you need, right? I talked about dating here. I was able to date, right? And through dating, you do make different types of connections. If I meet a Taiwanese girl that didn't speak Chinese, I met her Taiwanese friends who spoke Mandarin, who spoke Chinese, and then they were all into different types of things. So of course, me being a foreigner, either they want to take me out and show me these things, you know, just because they never hung out with a foreigner before who spoke Chinese, or they speak English and they want to practice. Doesn't really matter. Like, they would take me out. I could go out and do different things. I would be exposed to new and different things from those experiences. And then if I met a Taiwanese woman that spoke English and Taiwanese, that's a whole different section of people that I can meet. Because her friends most likely speak English, right? They're most likely interested in foreign things that I may be enjoy, right? That those relationships are important. Because when you're back at home, what do? You go on dates. And if you don't, and once you find a girlfriend or boyfriend, you hang out with your friends, and then your friends, and then you and your friends hang out with her and her friends. Those are important things that you need. And for me, I was able to do that because I had a friend who was a housemate. So it was even easier. I didn't have to. He wasn't 40 minutes away. He was at home. Hey, come hang out with my friend Patrick. Patrick, what you doing tonight? Nothing? You want to come hang out? Yeah, let's go. All right, I'm going to tell her to bring her friend. Right? So, I mean, it's easy. It was not, I won't say it was easy, but it was remnants of home. It was similar to things that I would do if I were at home. So I was able to build that connection. Through those connections, I was able to establish something that was solid, something I was comfortable with, something where even though I'm not at home, I felt at home. The second thing were my friends. I've met and have a variety of different friends from all over, right? So I told him about my friend Steven. He's a little person. He's Thai, but he's in Taiwanese. He speaks all these languages, and he knew how to party and have a good time. Right? Really, really good friend of mine, one of the best people I've ever met first, and one of the best friends I've ever had in my life. And then I had a friend from St. Vincent and the Grenadines, right? We met these two black girls at a Snoop Dogg concert. One of them was from Connecticut. I don't really have that many friends from Connecticut in America. I have none, I think. Maybe one that I met when I was interning there. And then I met a friend from the Caribbean Islands. And then I have friends from Africa, from the Gambia. He's my barber. And then I met friends from, you know, like, so basically you met people from all over the world. But not only, and because they were foreign, you know, we kind of had those connections. So I'm going out and still, again, if I was in Chicago, I'd be going to different bars or different clubs, different parties, different events to meet different people. But here, the connections I was able to make were with different people from all over the world. So I'm learning something every time I'm interacting with them. I'm mentally stimulated. I'm mentally challenged. It was amazing, right? It was like, man, everything I needed was right here, right? One thing that I do want to talk about is the food. While I could cook and have parents ship seasonings and food and chicken and stuff is all here, I did miss, you know, catfish. You know, you did miss catfish. Can't really get people to make catfish the way you get it at home. I did miss sunflower seeds. People have to mail me sunflower seeds. There are some things you just, you know, you can't get here. You can get a lot, but not everything. I don't want to say like, oh, it was just like home. No, it was similar. Not just like home, but very, very similar. So one of the things I want to say is it's not as different building connections, that aspect of it, as if I were back at home. And the ways that I went about doing things aren't as different as if I were back at home, right? So those connections abroad, more important. And here's what I say, like having a best friend and having close friends and having a, you know, girlfriends. Look, so when those important holidays come up, so you have Christmas, all about family, Thanksgiving. Not necessarily about what we celebrate in America because it's terrible. We all know that. But, you know, it's a family. For us, it's a family holiday where the whole family comes together. Birthdays. That's pretty much it. Like, I don't think any other holidays are important to put in that category. But so events like those, because I had, you know, this foundation when Christmas came up. Yeah. All of us get together, go down to the southern part of the island, be on a beach, laid back, chilling, exchanging gifts, hanging out, having a good time. Why? We're all far away from our families. So we're far away from home, and we share those same feelings. We understand each other. We understand how we're feeling, but we're able to come together, you know, and kind of supplement that. Like it's not replacing. Can't replace family. There's nothing like me being at home. Like last year was the first time in 7 years I was able to be home for Christmas. It was amazing. Right, I had my nephew there. I was able to get him gifts. I was able to get everybody gifts and give it to them in person. It didn't come in the mail in the form of a postcard. Right, I got to see my mom. You know, I had to cook food for everybody, drive around from house to house exchanging gifts. You know, Christmas. There's nothing that can replace that. Right, but during that time, instead of me sitting at home, oh man, I miss my family. You know, I complain about it. I was like, all right, I'm going out with my Taiwan family because that's what they grew to become. And we're hanging out. We're exchanging gifts. We're celebrating. You know, we're having a good time. We're Skyping our families. And because we're so close, our families know them. So, oh, hey, Patrick. Hey, happy Merry Christmas. Hey, Jackie. Hey, Steven. I see you in the photos. Oh, happy Merry Christmas, everybody. I sent you guys a Christmas package. Carl got, did you give them the gifts yet? No, I'm sorry. You sent Patrick some sunflower seeds and I ate them. Right? So, I mean, you have those things. Those things are there. Those things are present. So connections abroad were one of the main reasons, you know, that I was able to stay here. And I was able to thrive here for as long as I have. So what's the difference, right? So if you had asked me in high school what the difference between a Thai person from Thailand and a Taiwanese person, I would have thought that you were crazy, right? Like, is one of those things that you just really don't know. I think for what I've learned from being abroad is that most people at their core and people that I've met and the connections I've made, they share the same love and passion for life and family as I have, right? So, I mean, of course, there are some disagreements and some, honestly, disagreements, but there are some differences in how, in our values and things that we, and the things that we saw and the things that we, you know, we put high value on, but, and things like religion and politics, but that's the same as things you'll experience in America. And honestly, because we're in a foreign country or we're in Taiwan, which is, or a friend that I had's home country, none of those things really matter, right? Because even if there were language barriers, we were able to overcome those. And we all shared a common interest in life and happiness and friendship and love, right? All those things, the same qualities I shared with my close friends I had back home, you know, were very similar to the things that I shared with people here. And again, I never thought that I would be able to have experiences like this or meet people that way or interact with people that the way that I was interacting with people. Like, it's something I just never thought I would be able to do. But it was something that kind of grew and developed. And again, people ask me, this is my experience. A lot of people come, or a few people that I know have come, and have had very different experiences, right? These things aren't, it's not easy to be able to be away from your family for the holidays. Like, it hasn't been easy for me by any stretch of the imagination. I think about my family every day. Every time I miss a birthday or a holiday or an event, right? I just have a new niece and new nephew. I want to see them crawl. I want to see them walk, right? I want to be able to be back home and experience these things with them. But at the same time, I also want to have experiences from my own life. So when I do come back home, I'm ready. So, like, it was funny because I was listening to a podcast, Chris Broussard, on ESPN, and he said, like, you have to sow your wild oats before you get married, right? It's like before you settle down and get married and get your wife, go out there and do all the wife or husband, go out there and do all the things that you want to do that you know you can't do once you're married. And it's not necessarily, I don't mean sleeping with a lot of people or dating a lot. It could be anything. Like, when you're married, it's really hard, and you have to share in everything that you want to do. You have to compromise. But when you're not married, you don't have to compromise on a lot of things. Whatever you want to do, you can do it. So get out, and I think sowing your wild oats kind of means get your selfishness out of the way, right? You are entitled to live your life the way you want to live it until you're ready to share your life with somebody. That's not a selfish mentality. It's realistic. It's like, well, eventually one day I want to be married. I know when I get married, I'm going to make a lot of sacrifices, save my money, can't be as frugal as I want to be, can't come home at 3-4 o'clock in the morning if I wanted to. I can't stay up playing video games. You know, like, there's some things that you have to compromise on. And I think while some marriages are open and you can do, you still have that flexibility, some aren't. Everything's different. So sow your wild travel oats, you know, before you settle down. Or find you somebody that wants to go out and sow their travel oats with you. That's still my dream. Somebody that I want to marry, someone that's like, all right, cool. You've been to all these cool places. You have an amazing time. You're an experienced traveler. They may or may not be. If they're not, they're like, cool. You can show me how to do this. I feel more comfortable doing this now. Like, I'm not anxious, or I don't suffer from anxiety from it because I'm doing something that's totally different. I'm with it. I want you to show me this. This seems cool. I've always wanted to do it. I never had a travel buddy. And now my future husband, or my current husband, is my travel buddy. Current wife, my travel buddy. This is amazing. Let's go out and have a great time together. Now, it takes a special kind of person to be that travel person I just described, right? Everybody's not as cool and as laid back as you think they would be, right, when they travel. And I think for me, before I marry somebody, I will take a trip with them, a Carl CP travel style trip. That'll let me know, because I don't plan on just stopping traveling because I'm married. Nah, like, me, you, and the kids, we packing up, we out here moving. Of course, we'll have a good job and have a steady income and all that, but nah, at least 3 times a year we're out of the country, right? So those things matter. So I guess another question I was asked about, and I kind of want to talk about is when you were gone for 2.5 years, you returned home. What was it like? So I call it, you know, home, the social side of coming home. So, you know, when I first came home after 2.5 years, I really wasn't sure what to expect, right? So, of course, I missed my mom, grandparents, siblings. But a lot of time had passed, you know, at that. And back then, when I had first left, we didn't have FaceTime and, you know, and Messenger and all this stuff, right? You had to get Skype. You had to install on a computer. It took a lot of work to talk to somebody face-to-face back then. So, you know, but being away for 2.5 years, it left a gap between what I knew and occurred when I left, you know, and all the things that happened in between versus when I returned. So, I mean, that in of itself was something that I had to digest and I had to realize once I was there, right? But my perspective on the world was different when I returned after 2.5 years. By that time, I'd done a Euro trip. I'd been to Thailand. I'd been to Cambodia. I'd been to maybe 15 new places by the time I went back home for the first time. But one thing was sure. I knew for certain how much I loved my family. And more than ever at that point in time, I wanted to be the biggest part. You know, I don't want to necessarily be the biggest part of their lives, but I wanted to, you know, come back and reintegrate myself into their lives. But, you know, at some point I kind of realized that while I was gone, time went on, right? They experienced new perspectives and things just as I had. So my sister, when I left, was in high school, was now, you know, getting ready to go to college. My nephew, when I left, was, you know, in first, second grade, and now in fourth and fifth grade. That he's a completely different person. My sister, who before I left, you know, wasn't married, I think. Oh no, she wasn't married at the time. You know, was dating someone seriously and on the verge of becoming married. Right, I had a newer nephew the first time I went back. Right, so the family grew. Their families grew. Right, so my sister had her own family. Right, she's still a part of our family, obviously, but she was creating and building and growing her own family. My sister had her own life, and you know, high school especially. You know, our teens, I come back, she was crazy, talking any kind of way, felt like she was grown, thought she knew everything, getting ready to go to college, same way I was, right? So just as much as I had changed and just as much as I had changed, so had they. Life doesn't stop just because you travel around the world, right? They're not going to say, oh, Carl, everything's not going to be the same when you get back. They're not going to say, oh, yeah, we're going to just sit back and wait for you to come. No, that's not happening. And it shouldn't happen, right? Had I been in America, I would have had learned very different things and been a very different person as well, just from a different perspective, right? So in my mind, initially, I wanted to just come back home and plop right in without missing a beat. But the truth was, as I realized, I had to listen first, and understand where they were then from before. No, at that moment when I first got back from before when I had left. And as much as I had to share from how I changed and what I had gone through, I had to be open and receptive and listen and concerned and, you know, and wary of and cognizant of all the things that they had going on, right? So I found myself doing a lot more listening than talking, which I try to do all the time, right? And I learned so much from them, right? I found out what I needed to be doing in Taiwan, getting myself together, preparations I needed to be making, right? From them, right? And as unconventional as that sounds, it was really refreshing. I'd seen so much from everyone else, but coming back and seeing how much my family has grown and prospered and changed and grew up, you know, and evolved was amazing, right? Unconditional love from family, in my opinion, is probably the greatest gift in the world. But sharing your growth, no matter what the circumstances are at that time, it just, for me, it amplifies that love and made the connection to me and my family stronger than it had ever been. Like, over the next few years, while I was away from home, long stretches of, like, and advancements in technology really, really helped, right? So FaceTime came up, iMessenger came up, right? So when I was here, now I have a phone where I can text my family, they can call me anytime they need to. Before, I had to get Skype, I had to have a Skype phone number, they had to email me or send me a Facebook messages. So, like, when things came up, I couldn't be as connected as I can be now, right? Like, Instagram wasn't even popping, no Snapchat. Like, I was a Twitter guy. I was still on Twitter, you know, the first 2 years when I came, because that's the generation I grew up in. That's how we communicated. But for me, like, knowing that my family not only accepted what I did and what I continued to do, but supported my decisions, allowed me to not have to carry that, you know, that feeling, that baggage of abandoning my family while traveling and working abroad. right? It provided a newfound perspective that only led to bigger and better things for me personally and professionally, right? That first time returning home for me made this evident. It made it clear, right? Now, family was one thing. Family, I don't want to say it was easier, but, you know, again, unconditional love, stronger than anything. Friends, it was similar but different, right? It was, for me, when I came back, it was abundantly clear who my real friends were, right? Who my real friends, you know, in college, you got your college friends and you have a bunch of them, right? Y'all, you hang out with, kick it. Yeah, you're in Chicago. Let's hang out. Let's do this. Let's do that. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, all right, Carl. Like, we get off work. Yeah, we come hang out. You know, like, you have those fair weather friends. Like, you see them sometimes on, like, special events. Your friend throws a house party. Y'all run into each other. Like, your birthday, they may pop up. But they're not like your, as I call it, like, ride or die real friends. Right? So, especially after being gone for some time, right, my real homies pick me up from the airport. My real homies, I live kind of far away from Chicago. We moved out to the suburbs. My mother did when I left, so I live like an hour away. My real homies came to visit, right? I didn't have a car when I came back. I sold my car. So, like, they would actually adjust their schedules to be able to pick me up, hang out, drop me off. Like, but, you know, and in terms of, like, my real friends, the friends that I met, like, when we met up, we didn't miss a beat. Sure, I've been gone for 2.5 years. Just as my life had moved on, so of theirs. They kind of kept in contact. Facebook helps. You know, Twitter helped. When Instagram came about, it still helps. But it's different. Like, you don't know what's going on in someone's everyday life. Like you can't really tell what's going on from Facebook and Instagram. People fake the funk a lot. It's not all authentic. It's not what's actually going on. But, like, we didn't miss a beat. My real friends. That's when I figured out real friends versus fake friends. And it was perfect because at that time, I was going through a lot of transition with friendships in Taiwan, figuring that out, right? And going back home kind of recentered me and let me know, this is what a real friend looks like. This is what a real friend is. A real friend is this. It looks like this. They have these qualities and characteristics. So I knew even more, not that I hadn't known at the time, Patrick was a real friend. Always had our best interests in heart. And he wasn't afraid to tell me the truth. Came back, real friends told me straight up, you got to keep in contact with us. We'll reach out, but you got to reach out first. You're leaving. Like, we'll try, but you got to realize, like, we're around family and work and jobs and all the societal pressure and being in America, being a black man or a black woman, like, you know how hard it is. You know how it is, bro. And for me, I can retort back, like, yeah, it's hard for me too, but I understood. I'm like, yeah, it's hard, but, you know, I am the one that's away. Look, more of the onus for my real close friends should be on me, right? Because if I was there, of course they'd reach out. But at the same time, I'm not. I'm the one that's away, right? So I understood that more as we talked about it, right? But them, talking to them, made me realize what friendship is and what I should or should not stand for. And they put me on game. They let me know what was going on. But again, for them, I didn't need to talk to them once once a week. But like a check-in once a month would suffice because our bond with my real friends is that real, right? And it's just, I mean, absolutely amazing. So those people were beyond besties, beyond buddies. They are like ride or die family. They're brothers and sisters from another mother, as we sometimes say. So the last thing I kind of want to talk about was one of the most surprising things for me. Right? Because as you know, I worked in Taiwan and I went back and worked in higher ed administration in America. But before I got to Taiwan, I had plenty of jobs. Right? I had internships every summer in college. I worked full-time in a movie theater, moved up to management there, right? When I was coming up, even when in high school, I had jobs, right? So I had been working since 14. Having a job wasn't necessarily new to me, and my internships were all in corporate America, downtown Chicago, high-rise buildings, really hands-on internships. I had some great managers, great leaders to kind of show me the ropes and make sure I was in, you know, tough meetings where I was in, you know, tough conversations and really a part of things and really – I want to really make sure I had a real internship, a real job-like experiences. Appreciate that. Love that about my collegiate experience. I love the school I went to, and I love the Posse Foundation because they really, really, really did give me a lot. And one day, hopefully, if the podcast blows up or I stumble upon a large sum of money, I will make sure I'm giving back to that organization because it's amazing. Can't do it right now. No, startup entrepreneur trying to get my stuff together. But, you know, absolutely something that I'm going to make it a point to do at some point in time in my adult career. But one thing is work in politics or work politics, home versus away, right? And I came to my job in Taiwan. I had zero expectations. Zero. As long as they treated me with kindness and respect, I would do my job to the best of my abilities. And I also took classes on the side, you know, so I could become fluent in Chinese. Because I wanted to know what somebody was saying to me or about me in the office. I didn't tell them this. Oh, yeah, girl, hey, I speak Chinese. Hi. Chinese behind my back. Well, excuse me, what you say? You know, like, I like that. I like being able to surprise people with my Chinese ability, especially in the office when they thought they were using words they didn't understand. But anyway. So, long story short, you know, as you guys know, after vowing to stay 1 year, I fell in love with my teaching job, right? I got promoted, became manager in 6 months, hired a bunch of amazing people, brown people everywhere. And, you know, and I was able to take off, you know, in that job. I was able to be in management for 7 years. And then I guess during that time, I learned a lot, right? Especially since I became a manager at 22 in a foreign country on a staff where my oldest team member was nearly 30 years older than me, right? Amazing, right? But the politics of dealing with staff, fair treatment, and not only being young, but also black on an all non-black staff was challenging enough. It was tough. Like, add that to the trickery of dealing with other managers and directors at the school who either one didn't like me because I would challenge them, or two, just didn't really want to understand me, or three, didn't like, you know, the way I was moving the program and how much control I had over the program. But I was working my butt off, right? Like, at that, dealing with all that stuff and trying to get, you know, and trying to get our own team and principals looking me in my face and telling me I wasn't capable of what I did. He then changed his mind 2 months later. Don't worry. It was hard, right? It was hard. Like having to follow decisions that were based solely on money. Right. So decisions that the school was making was just about money. It wasn't about the students at all, about their well-being at all. It was like, hey, we're a private school. We need money to stay afloat. All right. The kids gonna have to suffer without this. Right. And it drove me crazy at some point. Sometimes. Right. It was crazy atmosphere, from having a great boss to having a terrible principal, great principal to a terrible principal, to having great directors who always supported me, to ones who were just after me all the time and I was always arguing with and really couldn't say nothing to control me because they didn't speak English and nothing you can do about it, player. So I mean, right? So like, you're not my direct supervisor. For being promoted to like moving up to managing director, where I definitely didn't really have a boss except the principal who didn't speak English, so it was basically my staff and my team. And you know, and I took a lot of pride in that, and I made sure my staff and my team were always taken care of and always okay, and the kids were always first, my first priority. But dealing with that, directors and principals and schools and governments not necessarily following that, was hard. But in my opinion, I not only survived that, you know, that environment, that atmosphere, but I thrived in it. I thrived, right? Like, it wasn't all bad, right? Like, those are the bad things. They wasn't all bad. There were, of course, highlights. There were, of course, incredible things I did there, incredible opportunities I was given, incredible support. Like, I loved the school enough to stay there for 7 years, right? I loved it. But management in a foreign country is no cakewalk, right? So when I turned to America for work, you know, to take a short hiatus from Taiwan, being in management for that long, the same, again, it was my first full-time job in my 20s. And I stayed there for 7 years. And, like, you're supposed to stay at a place for 5 years and then, you know, move on or change positions, especially once, like I did, I reached as high as I could go. The only next level was a full-on director, which I basically already was, in the work that I was doing, or a principal. And I had no desire to become a principal. That's way too much politics for me. While I could do it and I think I could thrive in it, I didn't want to do it in Taiwan. I mean, I think now, could I? Would I be interested in it? Yes, I would be. Only because I would learn the language. I would have to learn and study the language and become fluent in ways that I didn't even know I could be fluent in it. I love the idea of that challenge. And more importantly, I see the potential in the students and the programs that could really help them. English based, yes, but also in other ways as well. Because again, I wasn't a licensed teacher when I came out here. I had a lot of experience, but I wasn't trained in it, didn't go to school for it. So I busted my butt to study it. Right? I studied as if I was in college on the job. I studied and I had on the job real life training. The best of both worlds. And I got paid to do it and was able to travel. But I studied my butt off because I'm not finna hire somebody and have them come in and me tell them what to do and not know my stuff. That's backwards. Don't make sense. They don't respect me then. People wouldn't. And why would they? Like, I'm hiring licensed teachers who've been teaching for 10, 15 years. They come in looking at me like, what? How are you my leader? What do you know? I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Here's how I know. This is the work I did. these are the programs I developed. These are the things I've done. They're like, oh, okay, all right. Shut up real quick. And that's happened more than a few times. But, you know, when I turned to America, I was expecting my experience to be a little different, right? Different than the way I was experiencing in Taiwan. I expected everybody to be working toward a common goal, something we kind of fell short of in Taiwan at the job sometimes because of government requirements and also because, you know, because of different things different directors wanted to do. Principal always had the final say, but sometimes because he's only one person, the first principal, like I said, had a vision. Everybody was moving in the same direction. First 3 years, 3.5 years was amazing. Those last four, two different principals, they didn't know which way was up. But I was like, nah, in America, it can't be like that. Very naive of me. Right? I expected it to be, you know, everybody to be working toward a common goal, for there to be transparency and clear mobility and all these other magical things that make America great. Right? To my surprise, right? And while I enjoyed my time working there and I enjoyed the experience and I've worked with some amazing people and I wasn't communicating in a foreign language daily, all plus, but point being, other than that, than the language aspect, there wasn't much of a difference between working in Taiwan and working in America from the actual work environment, from the actual work culture, right? It was very oddly similar, right? And a lot of different things that were going on. Administration was very out of touch with the workers in a lot of different ways, right? So there were, and some problems that I faced in Taiwan, I also faced in America. And I'm not saying this to say that these were negative experiences at all, but some of the negative things I was experiencing in both positions were very similar. And one would think in a foreign country, different, a lot harder, so different than America. It's because you're in a different place, it's so unique. No, it's very, very similar. The types of people problems I dealt with, very, very similar. Work problems, boss problems, very, very similar. Administration problems, very, very similar. People really on the ground doing the work, being kind of ignored sometimes, very, very similar. Right? And again, you can fight through these things. You can overcome these things. And most people do, and most people did. But for me, I'm like, man, if I'm going to do all that, I might as well go back to, right? Like, I might as well go back to where I was. At least have more freedom and more, like, again, I will say I feel like I had a lot of freedom in the job that I had in both places, which is something I know I want out of a job that I have. I don't want to be in an office 24 hours, like eight hours a day. Can't do it. Don't want to. Fight as hard as I can to avoid that, right? That's not an experience I want to have. If I have to, I will do it. Right? I've worked two jobs. I'm not afraid of hard work at all or doing something I don't want to do to get to where I want to be. Not afraid of that at all. But, you know, these experiences weren't as different as I thought they would be. They weren't as unique and specific to a location as I dreamed that they would be, dare I say. They weren't. They were very, very similar. So between family and friends and work, that's kind of how, you know, I was able to, that's basically from all these things I kind of just talked about. That's how I was able to make the best decision of my life to decide to become an entrepreneur and chase my dreams. Through a company I'd been working on, you know, in bits and pieces with Patrick, for the past 2.5 years, we're like, all right, we're never going to get to where we want to be if we still have another full-time job and try to do this full-time. Let's save up money. Let's do our research. Let's put all of it into us, into something we believe in. We don't have to worry about fighting with other people who don't believe in our dream, who are putting money above everything else. Like CP Travels, if we're in it to make money, wrong thing to do. We should stay where we was at, right? We're in it because we really believe in the difference we can make in people's lives and people's experiences and sharing the information that we've gained so much of. At some point, we do want to work with colleges and universities to take people to Taiwan, to bring students to Taiwan, right? To send people who never thought they would go to a place to go with them to these places and show them, not necessarily things that we've done, but things they thought they never could do or would do, right? That all these things kind of build one, and the experience I had in management in Taiwan, the experience I had in management in America and internships and higher administration, all these things have helped me. I've learned from each of them. So coming from Taiwan and having that kind of work experience, that kind of friendship experience, that kind of relationship experience, that kind of almost familiar experience, coming home, my eyes are open to a variety of different things, a lot of different things. It's tough. It's hard. It's difficult. You always want to be at home, but you also have to fly the coop. You have to leave the nest. But when you come home, you have to be open. You have to listen. You have to learn. You have to understand. Things go on, right? It's not going to be what it used to be. It might not even be what you expect it to be, but it is. And that's the reality of it. And while I know there are a huge difference between America and Taiwan, it's not my experience in these two cases are what I'm talking about only. I know there are very vastly different experiences we can kind of focus on. I'm focusing on mine, right? How it's like for me being abroad and then going back home and the journey home, and still balancing being abroad and going back home. Like every time I go home, it's kind of the reason why I travel. Every time I go to a place, whether new or old, in a different country, it's refreshing. It's new. Like, cause I know I can have a new or different experience. I know something new is going to happen. I'm going to see something I never saw before, or do something I never thought I'd do before, or do something that I just don't do every day. That's the thing. Doing and seeing stuff I don't do and see every day. So when I go home, because a little time has passed, I'm doing and seeing people, even though I've known them all my life, that are different, that have changed, that have grown. I'm having different experiences with them. We're having different conversations, right? Like, we're not worn and dull and worn out from talking and seeing each other every day. It's new. Right. And for me, I know people are like, oh, I have a problem with that. Like, what's wrong with, you know, seeing? There's nothing wrong with it. Like I'm open to either experience. I've been at home for first 18 years of my life, lived home, done that, love that. But also I've traveled and I love the thrill of a new experience, a thrill of learning, a thrill of things not being the same as they used to be. I love that. I love that aspect of my life. And I want to keep that. Right. I want to keep that. At some point, I do want to be at home, just at home with family. My sisters, my nieces, my nephews, my mother, my parents, my grand. I want to, especially, you know, as everyone gets older. I want to be a part of that. But the great thing about social media, they get to see me doing what I do. I get to see what they're doing. And then when I come back, we can talk about it. And I think from now, I do want to spend at least a month or two each year back at home. And then the rest of the 10 months, I get to be in another country, traveling, teaching, doing my own company. Well, hopefully just running my company in different places throughout the world. I love that thrill. How long I'll love it, who knows? But for right now, it's something I definitely want to do for the remainder of the time. And I think from the first time from leaving Taiwan and going back home showed me that I could continuously do it. And again, things have come up. You know, we have deaths in the family. You have family emergencies. And if you save up, you know, and you stay in contact, then going back and flying back home, you can do those things. I've had to fly back for family emergencies. People in the hospital, funerals. I flown back for those. Are they tough? Absolutely. Are they hard to deal with? Yes. Yes. But being in a job and in a position and in a career that allows me the flexibility to go back and be with my family when they really, really need me, it's good. It's great. Because I always say that, you know, even if I was back at home, I would be building my own family, right? I'd probably be working a job that took up a lot of my time. Granted, I could go visit them on the weekends and, you know, text them and stuff and just have the feeling of being closer. Who knows? If I'm in another state, granted, it's, you know, 7 hours closer, but, you know, it's still similar in some ways. Different in a lot, but similar in some too. So all this to say that, you know, life abroad, Taiwan, and the journey home it's beyond amazing. It's beyond challenging. It's beyond worth it, or it has been beyond worth it for me. And I just really love and appreciate, and I'm thankful for the support that I got from my family, from my friends, you know, from those who truly care about me. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without them. So, as always, thanks for tuning in, guys. Really hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Black Expat. Send me a comment below, or let me know anything else you'd like me to talk about. I have a ton of topics coming your guys' way. And of course, I will be podcasting and live streaming from CP Travel's Facebook page in Australia in 2.5 weeks. November 14th to November 26th, we'll be in Cairns, Australia, Sydney, Australia, and Ayers Rock, Australia as well. Tune into that. Follow the social media handle. You'll see all the amazing things that's going on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for the support. I'm Carl, the Black Expat. We out, yeah.